Chapter 12. I didn't think it was safe to make our atmosphere descent in New Jersey without filing a flight plan. Princeton is near important targets. We might be homed on by everything up to A-missiles. The mother thing got that indulgent chuckle in her song.
I fancy we can avoid that.
She did. She put us down in a side street, sang goodbye, and was gone. It's not illegal to be out at night in spacesuits, even carrying a rag dolly. But it's unusual. Cops hauled us in. They phoned Pee-wee's father, and in 20 minutes we were in his study, drinking cocoa and talking and eating shredded wheat. Pee-wee's mother almost had a fit. While we told our story, she kept gasping,
"I can't believe it!"
Until Professor Reisfeld said,
"Stop it, Janice, or go to bed."
I don't blame her. Her daughter disappears on the moon and is given up for dead, then miraculously reappears on Earth. But Professor Reisfeld believed us. The way the mother thing had understanding, he had acceptance. When a fact came along, he junked theories that failed to match. He examined Pee-wee's suit, had her switch on the helmet, shined a light to turn it opaque, all with a little smile. Then he reached for the phone.
Dario must see this.
At midnight, Kurt?
Please, Janice. Armageddon won't wait for office hours.
Professor Reisfeld?
Yes, Kip?
You may want to see other things first.
That's possible.
I took things from Oscar's pockets. 2 beacons, one for each of us. Some metal, paper covered with equations. 2 happy things, and 2 silvery spheres. We had stopped on Vega 5. Spending most of the time under what I suppose was hypnosis, while Prof. Joe and another professor thing pumped us for what we knew of human mathematics. They hadn't been learning math from us. Oh, no. They wanted the language we use in mathematics, from radicals and vectors to those weird symbols in higher physics, so that they could teach us. The results were on the metal paper. First, I showed Professor Reisfeld the beacons. The mother thing's beat now includes us. She says to use these if we need her. She'll usually be close by, 1,000 light years at most. But even if she is far away, she'll come.
Oh.
He looked at mine. It was neater and smaller than the one she haywired on Pluto.
Do we dare take it apart?
Well, it's got a lot of power tucked in it. It might explode.
Yes, it might.
He handed it back, looking wistful. A happy thing can't be explained. They look like those little abstract sculptures you feel as well as look at. Mine was like obsidian, but warm and not hard. Pee-wee's was more like jade. The surprise comes when you touch one to your head. I had Professor Reisfeld do so, and he looked awed. The mother thing is all around you, and you feel warm and safe and understood. He said,
"She loves you." The message wasn't for me. Excuse me.
Oh, she loves you, too.
Eh?
She loves everything small and young and fuzzy and helpless. That's why she's a mother thing. I didn't realize how it sounded, but he didn't mind.
You say she is a police officer?
Well, she's more of a juvenile welfare officer. This is a slum neighborhood we're in. Backward and pretty tough. Sometimes she has to do things she doesn't like, but she's a good cop, and somebody has to do nasty jobs. She doesn't shirk them.
I'm sure she wouldn't.
Would you like to try it again?
Do you mind?
Oh, no, it doesn't wear out. He did, and got that warm, happy look. He glanced at Pee-wee, asleep with her face in her cereal.
I need not have worried about my daughter between the mother thing and you.
It was a team. We couldn't have made it without Pee-wee. The kid's got guts.
Too much, sometimes.
Other times you need that extra. These spheres are recorders. Do you have a tape recorder, Professor?
Certainly, sir.
We set it up and let a sphere talk to it. I wanted a tape because the spheres are one shot. The molecules go random again. Then I showed him the metal paper. I had tried to read it, got maybe 2 inches into it. Then just recognized a sign here and there. Professor Reisfeld got halfway down the first page, stopped.
I had better make those phone calls.
At dawn, a sliver of old moon came up, and I tried to judge where Tombaugh Station was. Pee-wee was asleep on her daddy's couch, wrapped in his bathrobe and clutching Madame Pompadour. He had tried to carry her to bed, but she had wakened and become very, very difficult. So he put her down. Professor Reisfeld chewed an empty pipe and listened to my sphere whispering softly to his recorder. Occasionally, he darted a question at me, and I'd snap out of it. Professor Giomi and Dr. Bruck were at the other end of the study, filling a blackboard, erasing, and filling it again while they argued over that metal paper. Geniuses are common at the Institute for Advanced Study, but these two wouldn't be noticed anywhere. Bruck looked like a truck driver, and Giomi like an excited yunyo. They both had that, okay, I get you, that Professor Reisfeld had. They were excited, but Dr. Bruck showed it only by a tick in his face, which Pee-wee's daddy told me was a guarantee of nervous breakdowns. Not for Bruck, for other physicists. 2 mornings later, we were still there. Professor Reisfeld had shaved. The others hadn't. I napped, and once I took a shower. Pee-wee's daddy listened to recordings. He was now replaying Pee-wee's tape. Now and then, Bruck and Giomi called him over, Giomi almost hysterical, and Bruck stolid. Professor Reisfeld always asked a question or two, nodded, and came back to his chair. I don't think he could work that math, but he could soak up results and fit them with other pieces. I wanted to go home once they were through with me, but Professor Reisfeld said please stay. The Secretary General of the Federated Free Nations was coming. I stayed. I didn't call home because what was the use in upsetting them? I would rather have gone to New York City to meet the Secretary General, but Professor Reisfeld had invited him here. I began to realize that anybody really important would come if Professor Reisfeld asked him. Mr. Van de Ventschik was slender and tall. He shook hands and said,
I understand that you are Dr. Samuel C. Russell's son.
You know my father, sir?
I met him years ago, at The Hague.
Dr. Bruck turned. He had barely nodded at the Secretary General.
You're Sam Russell's boy?
You know him too?
Of course. On the statistical interpretation of imperfect data. Brilliant.
He turned back and got more chalk on his sleeve. I hadn't known that Dad had written such a thing, nor suspected that he knew the top man in the Federation. Sometimes I think Dad is eccentric. Mr. Van D. waited until the double domes came up for air, then said,
You have something, gentlemen?
Yeah,
said Bruck.
Superb,
agreed Giomi.
Such as?
Well,
Dr. Bruck pointed at a line of chalk.
That says you can damp out a nuclear reaction at a distance.
What distance?
How about 10,000 miles? Or must you do it from the moon?
Oh, 10,000 miles is sufficient, I imagine.
You could do it from the moon, if you had enough power. Magnificent.
It is. Anything else?
What do you want? Egg in your suds?
Well,
see that 17th line? It may mean anti-gravity. I ain't promising. Or, if you rotate 90 degrees, this unstable Latin thinks it's time travel.
It is!
If he's right, the power needed is a fair-sized star. So forget it.
Bruck stared at Hen's tracks.
A new approach to matter conversion. Possibly. How about a power pack for your vest pocket that turns out more ergs than the Brisbane reactor?
This can be done?
Ask your grandson. It won't be soon.
Bruck scowled.
Dr. Bruck, why are you unhappy?
Bruck scowled harder.
Are you going to make this top secret? I don't like classifying mathematics. It's shameful.
I batted my ears. I had explained to the mother thing about classified, and I think I shocked her. I said that the FFN had to have secrets for survival, just like Three Galaxies. She couldn't see it. Finally, she had said that it wouldn't make any difference in the long run. But I had worried, because while I don't like science being secret, I don't want to be reckless either. Mr. Van D. answered,
I don't like secrecy, but I have to put up with it.
I knew you would say that.
Please. Is this a U.S. government project?
Of course not.
Nor a Federation one. Very well. You've shown me some equations. I can't tell you not to publish them. They're yours.
Brock shook his head.
Not ours.
He pointed at me.
His.
I see.
The Secretary General looked at me.
I am a lawyer, young man. If you wish to publish, I see no way to stop you.
Me? It's not mine. I was just, well, a messenger.
You seem to have the only claim. Do you wish this published? Perhaps with all your names?
I got the impression that he wanted it published. Well, sure, but the third name shouldn't be mine. It should be... I hesitated. You can't put a birdsong down as author. Make it Dr. M. Thing.
Who is he?
She's a vegan, but we could pretend it's a Chinese name. The Secretary General stayed on, asking questions, listening to tapes. Then he made a phone call to the moon. I knew it could be done. I never expected to see it.
Vandevenjik here. Yes, the Secretary General. Get the Commanding General. Jim? This connection is terrible. Jim, you sometimes ought to practice maneuvers. My call is unofficial, but you might check a valley.
He turned to me. I answered quickly.
A valley just past the mountains east of Tambor Station. I haven't consulted the Security Council. This is between friends. But if you go into that valley, I very strongly suggest that it be done in force with all weapons. It may have snakes in it. The snakes will be camouflaged. Call it a hunch. Yes, the kids are fine, and so is Beatrix. I'll phone Mary and tell her I talked with you.
The Secretary General wanted my address. I couldn't say when I would be home, because I didn't know how I would get there. I meant to hitchhike, but didn't say so. Mr. Van D's eyebrows went up.
I think we owe you a ride home, eh, Professor?
That would not be overdoing it.
Russell, I heard on your tape that you plan to study engineering, with a view to space.
Yes, sir. I mean, yes, Mr. Secretary.
Have you considered studying law? Many young engineers want to space, not many lawyers. But the law goes everywhere. A man skilled in space law and meta law would be in a strong position.
Why not both? I deplore this modern over-specialization.
That's an idea. He could then write his own terms.
I was about to say I should stick to electronics, when suddenly I knew what I wanted to do. I don't think I could handle both.
Nonsense,
Professor Reisfeld said severely. Yes, sir, but I want to make spacesuits that work better. I've got some ideas.
That's mechanical engineering, and many other things, I imagine. But you'll need an M.E. degree.
Professor Reisfeld frowned.
As I recall your tape, you passed college boards but hadn't been accepted by a good school.
He drummed his desk.
Isn't that silly, Mr. Secretary? The lad goes to the Magellanic Clouds but can't go to the school he wants.
Well, Professor, you pull while I push?
Yes, but wait.
Professor Reisfeld picked up his phone.
Susie, get me the president of MIT. I know it's a holiday. I don't care if he's in Bombay or in bed. Get him.
Good girl. He put down the phone.
She's been with the Institute 5 years and on the university switchboard before that. She'll get him.
I felt embarrassed and excited. MIT. Anybody would jump at the chance. But tuition alone would stun you. I tried to explain that I didn't have the money. I'll work the rest of this school year and next summer. I'll save it. The phone rang.
Reisfeld here. Hi, Oppie. At the class reunion, you made me promise to tell you if Brooks tick started bothering him. Hold on to your chair. I timed it at 21 to the minute. That's a record. Slow down. You won't send anybody unless I get my pound of flesh. If you start your lecture on academic freedom and the right to know, I'll hang up and call Berkeley. I can do business there. And I know I can here, over on the campus. Not much. Just a 4-year scholarship, tuition, and fees. Don't scream at me. Use your discretionary fund, or make it a wash deal in bookkeeping. You're over 21. You can do arithmetic. Nope, no hints. Buy a pick and a poke, or your radiation lab won't be in on it. Did I say radiation lab? I meant the entire physical science department. You can flee to South America. Don't let me sway you. What? I'm an embezzler, too. Hold it. You applied for MIT?
Yes, sir, but...
He's in your application files. Clifford C. Russell. Send the letter to his home and have the head of your team fetch my copy. Broad team, headed by a mathematical physicist. Farley, probably. He's got imagination. This is the biggest thing since the apple conked Sir Isaac. Sure, I'm a blackmailer, and you are a chair warmer and a luncheon speaker. When are you returning to the academic life? Bestibula, bye.
He hung up.
That settled. Kip, the one thing that confuses me is why those worm-faced monsters wanted me.
I didn't know how to say it. He had told me only the day before that he had been correlating odd data, unidentified sightings, unexpected opposition to space travel, many things that did not fit. Such a man is likely to get answers and be listened to. If he had a weakness, it was modesty, which he hadn't passed on to Pee-wee. If I told him that invaders from outer space had grown nervous over his intellectual curiosity, he would have poo-pooed it. So I said, "They never told us, sir, but they thought you were important enough to grab." Mr. Van Deventschik stood up.
"Kurt, I won't waste time listening to nonsense. Russell, I'm glad your schooling is arranged. If you need me, call me."
When he was gone, I tried to thank Professor Reisfeld. "I meant to pay my way, sir. I would have earned the money before school opens again."
"In less than 3 weeks? Come now, Kip."
"I mean, the rest of this year, and..."
"Waste a year? No."
"But I already..." I looked past his head at green leaves in their garden. "Professor, what date is it?"
"Why, Labor Day, of course."
"Forthwith to the space-time whence they came."
Professor Reisfeld flipped water in my face.
"Feeling better?"
I guess so. We were gone for weeks."
"Kip, you've been through too much to let this shake you. You can talk it over with the Stratosphere twins."
He gestured at Giomi and Brooke.
"But you won't understand it. At least, I didn't. Why not assume that 167,000 light-years leaves room for Tennessee windage amounting to only a hair's breadth of a fraction of 1%? Especially when the method doesn't properly use space-time at all."
When I left, Mrs. Reisfeld kissed me, and Pee-wee blubbered, and had Madame Pompadour say goodbye to Oscar, who was in the back seat because the professor was driving me to the airport. On the way, he remarked,
"Pee-wee is fond of you."
I hope so."
"And you? Or am I impertinent?"
"Am I fond of Pee-wee? I certainly am. She saved my life 4 or 5 times. Pee-wee could drive you nuts, but she was gallant and loyal and smart, and had guts."
"You won a life-saving medal or two yourself."
I thought about it. Seems to me I fumbled everything I tried, but I had help, and an awful lot of luck. I shivered at how luck alone had kept me out of the soup. Real soup.
"Luck is a question-begging word. You spoke of the amazing luck that you were listening when my daughter called for help. That wasn't luck."
"Huh? I mean, sir?"
"Why were you on that frequency?" "Because you were wearing a spacesuit." "Why were you wearing it?" "Because you were determined to space. When a spaceship called, you answered. If that is luck, then it is luck every time a batter hits a ball. Kip, good luck follows careful preparation. Bad luck comes from sloppiness. You convinced a court older than man himself that you and your kind were worth saving. Was that mere chance?"
Fact is, I got mad and almost ruined things. I was tired of being shoved around."
"The best things in history are accomplished by people who get tired of being shoved around."
He frowned.
"I'm glad you like Pee-wee. She is about 20 years old intellectually and 6 emotionally. She usually antagonizes people. So I'm glad she has gained a friend who is smarter than she is."
My jaw dropped. "But, Professor, Pee-wee is much smarter than I am. She runs me ragged. He glanced at me.
She's run me ragged for years. And I'm not stupid. Don't downgrade yourself, Kip.
It's the truth.
So, the greatest mathematical psychologist of our time, a man who always wrote his own ticket, even to retiring when it suited him, very difficult when a man is in demand, this man married his star pupil. I doubt if their offspring is less bright than my own child.
I had to untangle this to realize that he meant me. Then I didn't know what to say. How many kids really know their parents? Apparently, I didn't, he went on.
Pee-wee is a handful, even for me. Here's the airport. When you return for school, please plan on visiting us. Thanksgiving, too, if you will. No doubt you'll go home Christmas.
Thank you, sir. I'll be back.
Good.
About Pee-wee. If she gets too difficult, well, you've got the beacon. The mother thing can handle her.
That's a thought.
Pee-wee tries to get around her, but she never does. Oh, I almost forgot. Whom may I tell? Not about Pee-wee. About the whole thing.
Isn't that obvious?
Sir?
Tell anybody anything. You won't very often. Almost no one will believe you.
I rode home in a courier jet. Those things go fast. Professor Reisfeld had insisted on lending me $10 when he found out that I had only $1.67, so I got a haircut at the bus station and bought 2 tickets to Centerville to keep Oscar out of the luggage compartment. He might have been damaged. The best thing about that scholarship was that now I needn't ever sell him. Not that I would. Centerville looked mighty good. From elms overhead to the chuck holes underfoot. The driver stopped near our house because of Oscar. He's clumsy to carry. I went to the barn and racked Oscar, told him I'd see him later, and went in the back door. Mother wasn't around. Dad was in his study. He looked up from reading.
Hi, Kip.
Hi, Dad.
Nice trip?
I didn't go to the lake.
I know. Dr. Reisfeld phoned. He briefed me thoroughly.
Oh, it was a nice trip on the whole. I saw that he was holding a volume of the Britannica, open to Magellanic Clouds. He followed my glance.
I've never seen them. I had a chance once, but I was busy, except one cloudy night.
When was that, Dad?
In South America, before you were born.
I didn't know you had been there.
It was a cloak and daggerish government job, not one to talk about. Are they beautiful?
Not exactly. I got another volume, turned to nebulae, and found the Great Nebula of Andromeda. Here is beauty. That's the way we look. Dad sighed.
It must be lovely.
It is. I'll tell you all about it. I've got a tape, too.
No hurry. You've had quite a trip. 333,000 light years, is that right?
Oh, no, just half that.
I meant the round trip.
Oh, but we didn't come back the same way.
Eh?
I don't know how to put it, but in these ships, if you make a jump, any jump, the short way back is the long way round. You go straight ahead until you're back where you started. Well, not straight, since space is curved, but straight as can be. That returns everything to zero.
A cosmic great circle?
That's the idea. All the way round in a straight line. He frowned thoughtfully.
Kip, how far is it around the universe? The redshift limit?
I hesitated. Dad? I asked. But the answer didn't mean anything. The mother thing had said, how can there be distance where there is nothing? It's not a distance. It's more of a condition. I didn't travel it. I just went. You don't go through, you slide past. Dad looked pensive.
I should know not to ask a mathematical question in words.
I was about to suggest that Dr. Bruck could help when Mother sang out,
hello, my darlings.
For a split second, I thought I was hearing the mother thing. She kissed Dad. She kissed me.
I'm glad you're home, dear.
I turned to Dad.
She knows.
Yes.
Mother agreed in a warm, indulgent tone.
And I don't mind where my big boy goes as long as he comes home safely. I know you'll go as far as you want to.
She patted my cheek.
And I'll always be proud of you. Myself, I've just been down to the corner for another chop.
Next morning was Tuesday, I went to work early. As I expected, the fountain was a mess. I put on my white jacket and got cracking. Mr. Charton was on the phone. He hung up and came over.
Nice trip, Kip?
Very nice, Mr. Charton.
Kip, there's something I've been meaning to say. Are you still anxious to go to the moon?
I was startled. Then I decided that he couldn't know. Well, I hadn't seen the moon, hardly. I was still eager, though not as much in a hurry. Yes, sir, but I'm going to college first.
That's what I mean. I have no children. If you need money, say so.
He had hinted at pharmacy school, but never this. And only last night, Dad had told me that he had bought an education policy for me the day I was born. He had been waiting to see what I would do on my own. Gee, Mr. Charton, that's mighty nice of you.
I approve if you're wanting an education.
I've got things lined up, sir, but I might need a loan someday.
Or not a loan. Let me know.
He bustled away, plainly fussed. I worked in a warm glow, sometimes touching the happy thing, tucked away in a pocket. Last night, I had let Mother and Dad put it to their foreheads. Mother had cried. Dad said solemnly,
I begin to understand, Kip.
I decided to let Mr. Charton try it when I could work around to it. I got the fountain shining and checked the air conditioner. It was okay. About mid-afternoon, Ace Quiggle came in, plunked himself down.
Hi, space pirate. What do you hear from the galactic overlords? Yuck, 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 yuck.
What would he have said to a straight answer? I touched the happy thing and said, What'll it be, Ace?
My usual, of course. And snap it up.
A chalk malt?
You know that. Look alive, Junior. Wake up and get hep to the world around you.
Sure thing, Ace. There was no use fretting about Ace. His world was as narrow as the hole between his ears, no deeper than his own hog wallow. Two girls came in. I served them cokes while Ace's malt was in the mixer. He leered at them.
Ladies, do you know Commander Comet here?
One of them tittered. Ace smirked and went on.
I'm his manager. You want heroing done? See me. Commander, I've been thinking about that ad you're going to run.
Huh?
Keep your ears open. Have spacesuit, will travel. That doesn't say enough. To make money out of that silly clown suit, we gotta have oomph. So we add, bug-eyed monsters exterminated. World saving a specialty. Rates on request. Right?
I shook my head. No, Ace.
Smatter with you? No head for business?
Let's stick to the facts. I don't charge for world saving, and don't do it to order. It just happens. I'm not sure I'd do it on purpose, with you in it. Both girls tittered. Ace scowled.
Smart guy, eh? Don't you know that the customer is always right?
Always?
He certainly is. See that you remember it. Hurry up that malt.
Yes, Ace. I reached for it. He shoved 35 cents at me. I pushed it back. This is on the house. I threw it in his face.
You have enjoyed Full Cast Audio's unabridged production of Robert A. Heinlein's classic Have Spacesuit, Will Travel, which featured Will McAuliffe as Kip, with performances by Joe D'Aloisio as Pee-wee and Cynthia Bishop as the Mother Thing. Other members of our cast included Bill Molesky, reading as both Dad and Oscar, J.P. Krangle, reading as Fatty and Dr. Bruck, and Peter Muller as Skinny. Additional Earthlings were portrayed by Craig Middleton as Ace Quiggle, Ben Elms as Mr. Charton, Daniel Bostic as Dr. Reisfeld, and Atta Pinto as Dr. Giomi. Bob Brophy played the Secretary General, and Lauren Singer read as Janice Reisfeld. The voice of the Skyway Soap Company was provided by Todd Hoban, and the Skyway Soap jingle was performed by Erica DeSocio. At Earth's Trial, Bruce Koval provided the voice of the alien judge. Bill Meidenbauer created the voices of both Wormface and Unio, and David Baker read as the Green Monkey. Other voices were provided by various members of the cast. This full cast recording was produced by Bruce Koval and Daniel Bostic, and directed by Daniel Bostic. Our recording engineers were Anta Pinto, Corey Hoban, and Brett Hoban. Music for this production was written and performed by Todd Hoban. The text of Have Spacesuit Will Travel is copyright 1958 by the estate of Robert A. Heinlein, and this production is copyright 2003 by Fullcast Audio. The print version of this novel is available from Del Rey Books. This entire production was recorded and edited at Todd Hoban Studios in Syracuse, New York. Fullcast Audio would like to extend special thanks to Tamara Pierce, who first suggested that we record this novel.